Welcome to the Versus History Podcast with your hosts, Patrick O'Shaughnessy, Connell Smith, and Elliot Watson.
Hello, my dear friends. I hope that everybody is good, happy, and well. It's Patrick, one of the co-editors of the Versus History Podcast. Today, we have a very special episode. We have fellow co-editor Elliot Watson putting on his history teacher and historian hat. And we have a segment for you from a very recent British Schools in the Middle East History Teachers Teach Meet, where Elliot joined us as the special guest speaker, drawing together his experience as a historian. That's our raison d'etre here, but also donning the hat of history teacher and head of history department. So something of his pedagogical hat and his curricular hat, talking about all things podcasting, so the genesis of the Versus History Podcast, our writing, our blogging, and all of that sort of stuff, but also how that can be incorporated in the classroom to help fellow history teachers and history students. So the excerpt you're going to hear is a conversation with me for British Schools in the Middle East, all about history, history teaching, pedagogy, curriculum, and all of that wonderful stuff. So if you could subscribe to the Versus History Podcast, that would be great. It helps other people find it, and give us a rating. That would be fantastic too. And you can get in touch with us at Versus History via all social media platforms. So away we go. Here we are with Elliot Watson talking all things history. Let's go. A couple of quotes to whet the proverbial appetite. This one is from Holland Modern History Review. So as we segue into talking about all things scholarship and historiography, simply put, historiography is the collection of histories on a particular topic. The main reason that it's important is that it reveals that key to the study of history as a discipline is debate. Historians are usually adept at presenting and defending arguments, so the notion that there are often no right or wrong answers to historical problems is central to an understanding of the nature of history. So it's not so much about right answers, because essentially the lifeblood, the zeitgeist, the sine qua non of our discipline is debating. So yeah, put that at the forefront of your history teaching as well. It's a debate. It's not 1 + 1 = 2 on many topics. This is ripe for debate, discussion, and occasionally divergence too. That's what makes history and history teaching and learning history the great thing that it is. And our second quote, from the same book, but much more pithy. Views of historians can be used as evidence to support a line of argument. So quoting from historians almost has a double impact. It counts as analyses and will lend to your analysis when you're writing history essays or articles. But it can also be used as evidence too. So it's like a buy one, get one free in terms of utilizing, resourcing, accessing, and pedestaling or platforming scholarship. Hopefully I've segued in nicely to the chat we're going to have with Elliot, who's very much at the forefront of that too. So Elliot, let's start talking about, well, where would you like to start? Anywhere in particular, or I can guide you if you like. He's looking at me.
Why don't you ask a question? You could guide me and I will retort.
Yeah, why not? Why not indeed? Right, okay then. So, history teaching. Tell me, how did you get into it? Let's set the scene. I know you work here as the head of history at St. Christopher's, but history teaching, what was the clarion call to its ranks?
Well, I think, and honestly, I don't think it's that much of a dissimilar career track to many. It wasn't something that I thought about when I was a child, and it was something that I became and evolved into in terms of position. And I think the most important thing for me wasn't necessarily the teaching. The teaching didn't come first. What came first was the interest in history. So my interest, I was always very good at history at school, and then I was good at history at university, and then did my degree. I was always interested in history, particularly American history. And then I did my PhD in history, and so on and so on. And I've spent the last, 24 years now, I'm 50 now, 24 years teaching history in various parts of the world. Where are we now? Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, Sri Lanka, Kuwait, lots of different places. So to me, the driving force, the thing I've always been interested in, is the history and the communication of that history to others. And obviously teaching teaching history is obviously the prime conduit for that. So there you are.
Exceptional answers. You were teaching when I was still doing my A-levels. I was just finishing my GCSEs then. Very long history and history teaching from Elliot. Okay, let's segue into versus history. Tell us all about where that came from. I'm happy to chime in too, but you'll do it far more pithily and articulately than I am, sure. So versus history, what is it? Why is it? Who is it? Where is it? Where's it come from? Where's it going? Just throw anything in there that you want to talk about. Versus history, over to you.
Okay, so I'm going to unmute my microphone now, but does that mean if you interject that there will be feedback, or?
I will just talk really loudly so it comes through your microphone.
Okay, so Patrick and I met, I guess, when I arrived here 9 years ago, and we were always driven by a greater interest in the way that we could communicate history to others beyond the confines of syllabus or curriculum content. And so we came up with the idea of a podcast. Neither of us had done podcasting before, but we thought we would give it a go. And the origin, the original podcasting, the rationale behind it was, and hence the name Versus History, is we would take a topic, a history topic, and Patrick would take one side of the argument and I would take the other side of the argument, like historians do. And we would try and debate the validity of our arguments, whether we believed them or not, using evidence, historiography, analysis, etc., etc., to see who could become the victor of that particular discussion. And it evolved over time to become a podcast that includes discussion on popular history, on current events. There are probably 50, 60 interviews with historians, people, authors who have written historical fiction, but as well as authentic history too. But then we branched out into books, where we have created both disciplinary texts, such as the 33 Easy Ways to Improve Your History, essays, but also the popular infographic history series and Blowing Up the Nazis, such things. We also adopted a wee man called Connell Smith, who then became part of the history, the core history collective. So we became a trio. And what else have we done? So we have the Versus History podcast, we have the Versus History books.
Lots of blogs, essay prizes.
Oh, that's right. We launched the Versus History Essay Prize last year. So we've now, and it was a phenomenal success. We had hundreds of entrants. We sifted through them and we awarded the prize money to two winning essays plus certificates, et cetera, et cetera. So we've really, from an inauspicious beginning of a small podcast where essentially, Patrick and I argued against one another, to a global empire, not really, but of books and podcasts and blogs and this kind of stuff. And it was all about, its origin was really to try and communicate history in a sophisticated but easily consumable manner. So there we are.
I told you he'd do it far more pithily and articulately than I, and he's just proved me right, which is always a good place to be, I guess. All right, then, what would you say to other history teachers that might look at Versus History and think, oh, that looks like a really good model. That looks like something I'd like to pick up, you know, have some efficacy and ownership in history and creating history, publishing history. But everything you do comes with an opportunity cost. So if I do this, I can't do other things. And in any event, I'm just really busy with the marking, the planning, the prep, the teaching. That consumes the whole swathe of my day. What would you say is the main reason that this is good? What are the outcomes from doing something like Versus History that make it worthwhile? Because you sustained it for 7-8 years. So that's a pretty big bit of time. So there must have been something in it that sort of kept you with it.
Why bother doing it?
What keeps you going during the dark and dreary days?
Well, I think the most obvious reason that springs to mind is, as history teachers, particularly ones that have been around for quite some time, some people, myself, longer than others, being older by virtue of being just simply older, there is occasionally, every now and then, a moment where you realize that you've been teaching the same thing to different students for years and years and years. And I think when we created Versus History, we felt a bit of a breath of fresh air, because we were able to talk about, we were able to argue, we were able to write, to publish work on topics that were not on the curriculum or were not directly on curriculum. And I think that breath of fresh air is what anybody who has a 9-to-5 job should really be looking for. But I would say particularly teachers, because by virtue of syllabi not changing frequently, you know, every 5 or 6 years, you do tend to teach the same thing over and over again. And if you got into history teaching because of your love of history, which is what I did, and you're teaching the same few things over and over, you might feel a little bit disillusioned with history itself, and that's a tragic thing. And so to my mind, it was very much worth the sacrifice of a few hours a week when perhaps I could have been doing other things, in order to just take a step back, refresh my love of history, but also contribute something to people that wasn't directly related to an exam board.
That sounds fantastic. Again, couldn't have put it any better myself. Tell me about the Versus History Essay Prize, if you will, because that, as you mentioned, had over 125 applicants from every continent in the world, bar Antarctica, I think. Very, very, very popular. Wet the whistle for that. What is an essay prize? Because I guess a lot of teachers who teach sixth form students seeking application to university will be cognizant of essay prizes. They become more and more familiar as you go up the school, but maybe those entering the profession or those maybe who only teach QT3 might not know. Tell us all about essay prizes.
Well, there are any number, or not any number, but there are a number of high-level essay prizes that are available to students up to the age of 18, obviously beyond, but the minute the essay prize that we have created is for those students under the age of 18, so up to year 12 and 13. And we teach our students what we hope are the core skills of history writing, history evaluation, history articulation and communication. And sometimes we have students that like to go further than the syllabus, but also have an innate desire to create something original themselves that isn't necessarily focused on the curricula, or their work is rewarded for its originality rather than by it adhering to a mark scheme. And I know that you do the same, Pat, and we all do this in the history department, is we encourage our students to approach history in a sophisticated manner using historiography and a wide array of opinions and interpretations. And so we figured why don't we put in place a prize that rewards students who go that extra, who have an interest in something that they like to dig deep into, so we have content rich but also skills rich pieces of original research and writing. And that's why we did it. We wanted to offer students the opportunity to engage at a level that they perhaps might not have been encouraged to do so by things like mark schemes and syllabi and these kinds of things. And it's gone very, very well. And we are launching our second year in a couple of months' time. And we look forward to reviewing those essays that come forward.
Thank you, Elliot. The final question from me is, what advice would you have for a teacher entering the profession that said, look, I like this idea of historiography, writing, going beyond the curricula, seeing debate as the zeitgeist and lifeblood of the classroom and history as a substantive academic domain? How would you go about encouraging that, as opposed to sort of the churn, the sausage factory of and the litany of facts? Now, facts are great, they underpin everything, but how could you incorporate, given your 25-odd years of experience in the classroom as historian versus history and the rest of it, how could they pick that mantle up and run with it? I mean, are there any quick fixes? Is it a long-term, short-term approach? Over to you. What could they do?
Well, I think it's important to remember, first of all, that opinions, historiography, interpretations, they should act as evidence, the same way that you would include a statistic as evidence, because they are as valuable, because as we mentioned right at the top of the today's discussion, historiography is evidence. The other thing I would suggest, particularly in the last 10 years, there has been a move quite rightly to decolonize curriculum in order to introduce a more diverse range of not just histories, but also voices on histories. And if there's nothing else that encourages you to include historiography other than the fact that you now get, or historiography allows you to include voices you haven't heard before, voices that have been excluded from history before, or voices that students have not heard before, then I think that can only be a good thing. Because at its very core, history is about contextualizing the past. And if you only have a very particular set of people that are engaged in contextualizing the past, and they don't come from a diverse range of backgrounds, cultures, languages, then you're in danger of not just excluding people from history, but also telling an untrue or at least or a very basic, myopic, unipolar version of it. And I think that should encourage you to include historiography, voices, different voices.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you very, very much, Elliot. Any questions? We do have one question here from a colleague that works over in Abu Dhabi. Hello, thank you very much indeed for that. Okay, we've got examination season coming up. Any tips for her students? If you had to give them one tip in terms of performance in public examinations, they're nobody's cup of tea, but they're the rite of passage that everyone in the British education system has to go through, Elliot, as you know. What would it be? One tip with a history essay.
Well, I mean,
there's so many potential. I can limit you to one
here. Okay, so it depends, obviously, if we're talking about, let's say, GCSEs, or whether we're talking about IB, or we're talking about A-level. I would say one is the importance of understanding the demands of the question. I would say that too few students engage with the question with the rigor that is required at that level. If you're talking about A level, to deconstruct every question in order to assess the value of the terms, the words, and the demands. Not just see a term or an element of content and just write as much as you possibly can. Because yesterday we were talking about whether or not there was a revolutionary transformation in the lives of women under Chairman Mao. And what we tried to determine was not whether there was change, because obviously there was, but the crux of that discussion is whether or not it was revolutionary. I mean, what does it mean for revolutionary change? What does revolutionary change mean? So it's important to engage with the question, but it's also important to engage with perspectives. We mentioned historiography here, and what I mean by that is I don't mean just write a perspective or a piece of historiography that supports or doesn't support an argument. What you need to do is engage with that. So, for example, if you're going to say that historian Smith has this opinion about X, you need to evaluate that opinion. You need to determine whether there is veracity to that opinion, what limits there are to that opinion, and whether there is evidence to the contrary or whether the evidence actually supports that. So it's not just, to my mind, it isn't good enough just to have a piece of historiography as evidence to support a point that you're making. You must engage with that historiography in an essay. That's what I would say. Those are my two tips.
Thank you very, very much indeed, Elliot. I think that brings us to our conclusion for today. Thank you very, very much indeed for joining us at the second British Schools in the Middle East BSME History Teacher Teach Meet for academic year 23-24. Thank you very much for your eyes and ears. And thank you especially to Elliot for joining us today and taking time out of his schedule. His very busy schedule as the head of history here at St. Christopher's School. So thank you. And if you want to join one of our networks offline, you can scan that QR code and it'll take you straight there. All the very best. And thank you for joining us for this iteration.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Versus History Podcast. Visit us at www.versushistory.com and follow us at Versus History on Twitter and Instagram. You can download all episodes from iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or from wherever you get your podcasts.